No, this is the tightest the show has ever been.
And it's very the tightest nervous. The show will ever be.
I'm very nervous.
Missed you guys. How you doing? Well, not so much Colton. I got to hear his dulcet tones yesterday, but you I've missed, Mr.
Yeah, I've been like out of commission. New house kicking my ass and everything. But I'm in an office dedicated to the podcast now.
Fuck, that's magical. Wait, now, is this your first house?
No. I owned a house in Pittsburgh many moons ago.
Got it.
But yeah, sure, we'll say it's like a first house. It's a great thing. I love it. It's a brand new house, brand new construction, so.
Did you get your mailbox fixed?
Yeah. Like, they were going to not deliver my mail. Dude, New Orleans government is real messed up.
What do you mean they were not going to deliver your mail? Like, they're just going to keep it?
Yeah. They were like, if you don't have a mailbox on the roadside, we're going to hold your mail in 10 days. I'm like, what? I've lived in the apartments for like the last, I don't know, 8-9 years or something. I'm like, I don't got a fucking shovel or a postal digger. I'm like, I had all this stuff, when I owned a house, but I'm like, geez. So it was stressing me out. I got a real fancy mailbox now. It's like cast iron.
He can cook on it.
It's a real sub. Yeah. Probably.
Yeah. It's actually really, a grill he stole from the park.
Yeah. You just open the flap and put some coals in it. And
it's been that kind of shit that's been driving me crazy though. I've lived here now 2 weeks and a day, and I don't have a trash can.
Where are you going to put your mail?
Like the city trash can. I called them, I don't know, like as soon as I moved in, I was like, hey, I need to, and they're like, okay, they tell you nothing. Then I've called back like 3 times. The lady's like, I can call you when it's getting delivered. I'm like, okay, do you know when that is? I can't tell you that. I don't know. I'm like, okay, are they like on back order? Is it going to be like 6 weeks or like 6 days? I wouldn't have that information.
So you've just been fleshing it?
Yep. So I'm like, no, I have to take it to work and like use the dumpster at work all the time. It's a fucking nightmare. And like, it's not like you don't make a lot of trash when you move into a new house, right? Like a ton of trash. On the lighter note, though, I've got like all my automation set up. So like my locks are all voice control automated. I can give people codes and lock it and unlock it from different places.
You just yelling at your front door to let you in.
It's pretty much what it is. Oh, constantly. And then Alyssa just opens it.
Yeah. She owns it like a normal person, and Zeno just constantly is grunting at his house.
I'm really into the smart house. I love the automation stuff and how it does things when I want to do things.
Nice. Did you do the whole Marie Kondo, does this give you joy thing and throw out like everything?
That's he didn't have much to throw out.
So. Yeah, there's no joy in Zeno's life.
Yeah, exactly. It's all pain. In all honesty, I kind of hate that show because I'm like, this is just called being a normal person. Like, just don't be a fucking slob. Get rid of bullshit. So, no, I would say I don't think I really got rid of that much. I got rid of some clothes because, believe it or not, I have a lot of t-shirts.
I can believe that.
That's right. He's got one sock and one pair of underwear left.
That's it. That's another thing.
82 t-shirts.
There was no washer and dryer, so I literally had to go buy underwear. I'm like, well, ran out of underwear. Had to go buy it.
Notice he didn't buy a washer and dryer.
No, he's just going to keep buying underwear.
Yeah.
That's how rich Zeno is.
Things don't happen like that where you just buy something and it gets like it's there.
And the worst part is he still doesn't have a trash can, so he's taking all these dirty underwear to work. And they're just littered all over the distillery.
Yep, I put them in the still.
It's his pachuga.
Yeah, that's pube pachuga.
Now that's a good intro. All right, here's our drop.
Start off at a good note.
It's a good clip. All right, this is the Still Talking Podcast, our irreverent distilling industry podcast with Colton Zeno and myself, Brian. Today, we've got all three of us back together again, and you guys just did a spirits judging competition, which I wasn't able to go to. I've already mentioned how disappointed I am in that and sad and distraught as a human being, but you guys got to do it. Was it fun? Did you have a good time? Learn lots of stuff?
It was fun. I will say I'm not allowed to talk about it, so... Yep. The only thing I can say.
I think we can talk about everything but the spirits.
Yeah, just anyone. You can't say who won, which was obviously me.
Or really who entered. Let's keep it at that too.
I will just say no. I mean, I was going to just be very vague and say that I'm pretty happy with where the industry, how it's matured, from where it's been over the years of these competitions to where it is now, the quality of product, and a lot of that has to do with simply time, but I think that people's, they're getting better at their craft. So I was pretty happy about that.
You seeing, I don't know if you can talk about this, Colton, this might be getting too into the weeds with it, but were there any changes this year from previous years and what was submitted in terms of product category? Were you seeing more of one thing versus less of another?
It was all pumpkin moonshine.
Yeah, it was all pumpkin moonshine.
Oh, now you're talking about language.
Yeah, actually it was... kind of to Zeno's point, I would say our 4+ year whiskey category was by far the biggest I've ever seen it, and dwarfed all the other categories in terms of whiskey flights, which was interesting.
Yeah.
But staying with whiskey, at least rye was the big one this year for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
There was a ton of rye, and then, previous years it's always been bourbon. One year it was just this huge flush of single malt, and I guess this year it's rye.
What's the single malt category doing? Is that stayed steady, or is that kind of ebbing and flowing?
The single malt category, certainly it hasn't been growing as much as I expected, but what did grow was the age on all of the single malts.
Right.
So I kind of saw the same players from a few years ago. Except this time it was all 4, 5, 6+ year old whiskey.
Okay, that makes sense. Considering a lot of the people that are doing the single malt are the people that have been around for a while.
Yeah.
And then, this year we actually had RTDs as a category, which was interesting.
Nice. How did that go?
I mean, White Claw didn't enter, so it was garbage. Yeah. But
Jesus Christ, as much as we talk about White Claw, this is bullshit.
This segment is sponsored by White Claw, actually. That's not true. Yeah. I'm sorry, White Claw.
Zeno's life is sponsored by White Claw.
Yeah.
That's going to be a weird cease and desist.
Please stop not talking about us.
The only thing that could ruin White Claw's brand is us.
That's how we should get Still Talking out there, is we should just send cease and desist to everyone who's not talking about us.
It's the reverse cease and desist.
Yes.
Wait, start and continue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like it. I did not hear anyone talking about us during the impeachment hearing, so I'm going to go ahead and send a few of those out. They got to name drop us at least a couple times.
What impeachment hearing?
Yeah. We're impeaching you from the podcast. You missed it last episode.
Yeah, I'm sure it was riveting.
Okay, let's get into news. We've got a few to get through here. We'll keep it succinct.
It's the news. It's time for news.
Let's do some Fed and association news right off the bat. TTB, this one's actually from the start of the month, but I thought it was worth highlighting. They put out a this is the California, let's see, this is the actual TTB, but it's in regards to California, a waiver of excise tax penalties for businesses affected by the California wildfires. So I thought that was actually pretty fantastic. TTB is basically saying, if you're on fire, we're going to give you a little break. So
that's nice.
Yeah. And actually, I do know that the local or the state California ABC has also done something similar, where anyone who had to evacuate or they're in a zone that's had any kind of problems, essentially, I don't know if they have to file specifically. I think they probably have to give a notice, but they're getting extensions and waiving penalties, which is, it's good to know our industry is willing to do that.
That's good news. I don't know. What's the status of everyone out there? Do we know anyone, like Farber? Has anyone heard?
I think Farber's okay. I talked to my friend Timo Marshall over at I'm totally blanking on their name right now. Anyway, they were in one of the evacuation zones, and they did have to evacuate for about a week. Looks like everything's okay. They've been back in. They're fine. The biggest problem they had now is, and this is about a week ago that I talked to them, is, you know, the tourists are gone. You know, so the people actually coming through visiting the distillery, getting the people back after an evacuation is kind of a, it's a pain in the ass. It's hard to deal with.
Like, come see a massive scary fire. Because our world is being destroyed. What are you doing, Brian? You're doing something. I can sense that you're doing something.
He's reading the news. He's
No, actually, it was bugging me. I had to grab a bottle of Timo stuff. It's Spirit Works Distillery. Plus I needed a drink, so.
Yeah, what are you drinking? Yeah. We don't tell people we're drinking nearly enough.
I mean, we're just so professional now. I assumed you guys don't even drink during the podcast anymore.
I drink all the time.
Well, that's going to be another sad t-shirt. Yeah. It's their straight triticale whiskey.
Ah, that's interesting. Pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Is that how you pronounce that, triticale?
I mean, are you going to ask me if that's how you pronounce
that's,
it?
Sure. That's how I've heard scientists pronounce it.
Yes, and I am, you know, part of a science society for some obscure reason. So yeah, let's go with that.
I stand corrected.
all right, news. So let's go through some association stuff here. This is Discus. Zeno, you weren't here yesterday when we talked about it, but I'll highlight again. Discus is essentially put together a healthcare for craft distilleries specifically. It's Distilled Spirits Council of the United States launches healthcare program to address craft member health coverage needs. So it's only in select states, but essentially it's if you're in a small business with less than 100 people as employees, you can reach out to them and potentially get some health coverage. So, and that's something I know we've talked about offline before, and we've talked a lot about with some of the other associations and stuff. So it's nice to see some traction there. We'll see where it goes.
I'd like to see a survey or something of how many distilleries don't offer healthcare to their employees in general. I mean, most of the ones I know do have some form of healthcare. And again, you know, it's state specific and how much they're actually offering. But
what's Discus play on that? Like, what's their benefit?
I think, I mean, again, we can speculate on that. But honestly, from talking to them, it's, again, it's outreach to the smaller producers. Their goal is very much to get as many small producers signed on to their Spirits United initiative as they can. Cause one, it's good for them just in terms of providing benefits to distillers so that they can use their name brand for lobbying and legislative efforts. It's smart. They can say there's distilleries in all 50 states and they have a lot more power on Capitol Hill, which is where a lot of, you know, their main membership care about. So it's kind of, it's, you know, it's symbiotic in that regard. I mean,
so it's just more of their initiative to get more people in more states.
Yeah, I mean, they're doing a trade show. They're doing more of their, you know, putting out more of their research. You know, again, the biggest issue that I know most craft distillers will have with Discus and their, you know, that Spirits United situation is you're not, if you join Spirits United, I believe you're not technically a member of Discus itself. It's a whole different setup. They're tied, obviously, but you still don't have necessarily voting rights with Discus. Which could change in the future. I don't know exactly. That's a conversation I need to have with them. But there is kind of a separation there of church and state in that regard. So that's something to keep in mind about Discus. But again, they're doing a hell of a lot in terms of outreach for craft distillers. So, I mean, it's worth noticing. I don't know. I think those are the questions. And, you know, I'm pretty sure we could get Chris Swanger, the new president of Discus. We could probably get him on the podcast, believe it or not. And we should ask him some of those questions.
Yeah, I actually like Chris.
Yeah, I'd love to see.
He's a really nice guy. His level of enthusiasm is crazy.
I'd love to see the answer of, well, how do you compare voting rights of a distillery that does, you know, 100 cases versus, you know, Beam or Jack Daniels?
Right. Well, and honestly, that's a really fair point. Like, I don't necessarily envy Discus's role of trying to manage their core membership, which are the huge producers that put in a ton of money and allow them to do the work they do legislatively, with the smaller producers who they get a lot of benefit out of in terms of actually having representation across the country. But again, they're not worth as much, and there's going to be some friction between the big and the small. And it is hard to say, okay, you all get equal voting rights in a group like that. I don't know the best way to do it. I mean, democratically, I'd like to see everyone have a voice, but I don't know the best way to balance it. That's,
yeah, I mean, should it be weighted or not? If, as soon as you start weighting it, it goes back to status quo now, which is only 13 or so good voting.
Well, and honestly, I think that's right. Well, and I think that makes sense why they kind of separate it in terms of, instead of just being Discus, it's the Spirits United, which then there's the tie-in too with the Small Spirits Council. So there's, you know, they're trying to keep the different pieces, I think, in their own lanes, which from their administrative role makes a lot of sense, and that will probably make their job a little easier, but we'll see how it kind of plays out.
Is there any similar industry, maybe not even similar industry, but just similar situation where there's, you know, big oil and tiny oil?
And small oil.
Does that exist?
Tiny oil.
My God, that's a good one.
Craft oil.
Craft beard oil.
Well, that definitely exists.
You know, I think most industries tend to consolidate as they get bigger and more mature. There are definitely industries that have smaller association groups, home groups, enthusiasts, things like that. I couldn't specifically name one. You've got the beer side, which they primarily have their main craft brewers association. And then you've got massive, you know, you've got Anheuser-Busch InBev, which I'm sure they have some.
I think the beer side's getting tricky too with all of the, and I mean, spirits is going to get this way, but all the buyouts and beer side, you're having fights between, like,
yeah,
well, these guys were part of our, you know, guild or trade organization, but all of a sudden they're AB InBev.
Sam Adams, right? That's,
I wouldn't that's even the say, constant. I wouldn't even say Sam Adams, though. I would say, you know, people would talk 10 Barrel out in Oregon, right? They're very craft, except five, 6 years ago or whatever, they were bought by AB. So do they still get to be part of the guild? Do they still to, you know, have a vote? I don't know.
I'm pretty sure they have it in their bylaws. I can't remember what that is, because I remember when ACSA first formed, it looked at those similar bylaws because it was looking at the Brewers Association as, you know, they blazed the trail. So I think they followed some of that logic. And I believe there are rules in place for, just like with ACSA, there are rules in terms of ownership. Once you lose a certain controlling interest.
Yeah, no, that, I mean, that is right. But there's stipulations to that that are up for debate in terms of, you get bought out, maybe, but you still say you have control of it, and how much control, like, you go and make day-to-day decisions, but all of your marketing and branding is now controlled, right? Like, are you really still in control just because you decide, well, we'll buy, you know, this grain today versus a week from now?
Man, this is a real dry topic, guys.
did you want to throw in a dick joke real quick before we move on?
It's just like, it's like a saltine in the Sahara, man. It's brutal.
All right, yeah, that's a really good point. So let's move on to something way sexier, and that's the craft beverage modernization tax reform act. I mean, obviously, every episode we got to give a quick plug on this. This news was from the 5th of November, so it's a little dated. I believe we picked up more co-sponsors since then, but essentially we're sitting.
Remember the 5th of November.
And for the movie, it is.
Right? Is it?
For the movie, it's great. Yeah. All right, we're at 315 co-sponsors in the U.S. House of Representatives and 73 in the U.S. Senate, which I think that's actually a little higher now. A lot of that increase actually came from the day of action that resulted in more than 10,000 engagements from over 3,000 individuals calling on their members of Congress to prioritize the passage of the bipartisan legislation. So again, we're in a situation where we don't have a vehicle for it, but it's got massive support. I mean, we're doing what we can. It's just a matter of getting government to get their shit together and get it done.
So what does that mean?
It
What's
means
a timeline like?
Until the end of the year? I mean, well, let's see. Congress,
yeah, we have
Congress will
recess
weeks. For the holidays at some point. I think we have like 3 weeks left of actual congressional like scheduled work left, which God knows if anything will happen, because we've still got at least what, a week more of impeachments, probably two. So at some point in there, they might squeeze in a vote for a few last minute. I mean, they'll do some votes for some last minute stuff. Fingers crossed, if everything goes well, at the very least, they'll pass one of those extender packages that I believe the FET is a part of. So that will give it another year. But
yeah, I mean, so the FET has been, I believe it's been, you know, put passed through committee into that extender package. But the extender package gets complicated because then you have a bunch of carve outs for industries that may not need a tax extension. And that's where members who technically support our bill right. are going to start voting down the extender package.
Yeah. I mean, the politics behind it, you're right.
Yeah.
It could
be prepared for that tax hike.
Anyway, FET, do your shit. All right.
Yeah, exactly. Wait, right. I want to go back to what we were saying about the organizations, too. I want there to be just one. I know that. ACSA, ADI, DISCUS.
I'd like them to keep all of their acronyms together, though, and just start stringing them along so it becomes really long.
Yeah absolutely. But with no hyphens at all. Just there repeat. Yeah, but actually jumble them up, too, so it makes no fucking sense at all. Yeah. Yeah. I like this a lot. No, Zito, I think that's a really good point. We should probably have another whole podcast just talking about that at some point. And, you know, I mean, over the last few years, that conversation has gone on for a while about ADI, ACSA, now that DISCUS has kind of entered the ring more so with the craft side, you know, what happens? How's this going to shake up? You know, ADI in a lot of ways is refocused. They've cut costs. They're kind of focusing in on being a little more, I think, profitable, and they're doing a lot more outreach as well. I mean, they're like, you're seeing them work with DISCUS in a way they never have before. Actually, this is the next bit of news too. ADI is now partnered with Total Wine and More in terms of their spirits competition, which I actually think is really clever. The American Distilling Institute has announced a new partnership with national spirits retailer Total Wine and More, designed to benefit top award recipients at ADI's annual spirits competition. Starting with ADI's 2020 Judging of Craft Spirits competition, all recipients of the Best of Class Award will be given the chance to schedule a half-hour in-person meeting with Total Wine and More senior sales executives to discuss goals and possible placement opportunities. So essentially, when you get a meeting, I mean, it's not a slam dunk, but it's kind of clever.
For ADI to do that, that's really smart.
It's really, really smart.
Yeah, who wouldn't like that opportunity as a maker? Like,
yep.
That's a really great idea.
Yeah. So, I mean, so again, you know, say what you will about ADI. They've been around for a long time. They really have helped focus on a lot of the startup distilleries. That's kind of what they've been known for. This is a good step in the direction of them trying to help more established distilleries and do the whole distribution side and help people out. And that's, you know, we'll see. I think it's a smart direction for ADI, and we'll see where they go.
Do you think that's enough to be... Yeah, I mean, how many, so there's what, 7 or 8 categories. So there's 7 or 8 meetings, right? Is that enough to garner 500-600 entries? I mean, people play the lotto, so sure.
Well, I mean, they get, right. I don't necessarily think that's going to push people over the edge per se, but okay, maybe I'm wrong on that. So you have people who've entered ADI before, and who've maybe gotten awards, or, you know, once they got an award, maybe they don't submit anymore, or maybe they kind of rotate through different competitions. I know people that do that. They'll submit ACSA 1 year, ADI next year, you know, San Diego, so on and so forth. This may be enough to say, hey, I do really well there. I'll get an award. Who knows? If it gives me an extra meeting, why not? So yeah, it could be enough to tip someone over. I don't know how many actual new submissions it would garner them, but from a brand standpoint,
I bet if they do some international,
like, it's got real good optics on it.
Outreach and all that, that would be the biggest for them, because those guys probably don't have, you know, connections to people at Total Wine.
ADI has pretty good international.
I love Brian when you use like business slang, like great optics.
Oh yeah, I totally, as soon as I said that and it came out of my mouth, yeah. I just thought of what you said again about this being a dry fucking episode. I'm like, God, we sound so professional. It's bullshit.
Yep, we were all on time. I told you it's bad from the beginning. What a mess. It's two together. Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, just get sloppy drunk and then get back on and try and let's talk about ACSA first before we do anything awful.
I put my booze in the office now, so I can just get,
so you don't have to get up, you can just wheel over.
Just some of my booze.
How far away are you from just putting a pullout in there, like a pullout bed, just living in that room?
Oh yeah, I mean it's not far at all.
I think one smart, fight smart. Away.
There's a bathroom attached. One fight, like
one fight, just a random one fight person. With your wife away from.
Yeah.
Okay, so ACSA, this is an important call out here, but the 2020 registration for their annual Distillers Convention and Vendor Trade Show, as a reminder, it is on March 29th through the 31st of 2020 in Portland, Oregon. So if you have not signed up for ACSA's convention, get on that. That should be a good one. I think we're all going. Course,
it's a brand new hotel,
West Coast. Oh, that's awesome. No, I love it. I mean, it's a 6-hour drive for me. We actually drive from Spokane to get over there and hang out for a few extra days, so I'm excited about that one.
Well, maybe I'll just fly to Spokane, drive
do it. You could caravan over. I think I believe the McKees over at Headframe might even drive over, stay the night with us in Spokane, and then we'll all caravan over from there, so you could ride with us.
Yeah, I mean, I was being sarcastic when I said that.
But he was gonna fly to Spokane, rent a car, and drive down.
Yes, yeah, separately.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna moon you.
Yeah.
While driving?
Yeah,
God, that's good.
Yeah, well, a man of many talents. All right.
Both his hands are on the roof. How's he? You know what? I don't want to know. All right, so get signed up for that ACSA. Any other ACSA news, Colton, being the resident board member in this group?
Sign up for the convention. That's it.
That's God, you're good. Also, hey, since I've been kind of shitty on the stage,
I take that back. Go ahead. Donate to the FET PAC. Do anything you can to get, you know, to good get call. This bill passed.
Good, good. One of the things that we as a group with the Good Guy Distillers group, that Facebook group that McKee and Johnny put together ages ago, we were going to help you more with the safety committee side. What do you need on that? Because I also have been shitty on helping out with the safety committee. What's new? What's exciting?
Nothing is new. Nobody has helped. Thanks. Thanks, guys. I just need volunteers. We're pretty hands awful. And time. So any...
Okay, yeah. Call out then.
Story of my life.
Contact Colton. You need hands and volunteers.
Anyone who wants to get handsy with safety, give me a call.
Get handsy with safety. I like it. That's a t-shirt.
That's a real good. Yeah, I like that.
We got a bunch of t-shirt ideas. We should sell t-shirts.
That would be a good idea.
We should sell. Hey, we do have t-shirts and stuff, right? Is that
well, we have them. We don't sell them, but they exist. No,
you can go on our website and look
at
them.
So, listener, go to our website, look at them, and if you don't buy a t-shirt, or more importantly, because we haven't done this call out in a while, go on to your podcast platform of choice and give us a review, hopefully positive. I'm not going to force your hand. I'm not your parent. But if you don't do that for us, Zeno will start calling you directly and just breathing heavily into the phone. Yeah. So I figure threats work really well to get us reviews and t-shirt sales.
Yeah. The t-shirt. We also have a mug that changes colors.
That we do.
Colton was really excited.
Hey,
about.
I have one in my house and it is amazing. I like to fill it just halfway to really fuck with it. But
so essentially we just got merch so you could deck out your place.
Yeah, Colton or me?
Yeah, it was Colton specifically.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay, two more pieces of news, then we're moving on. This is, oh God, you sent me another one, Colton. Okay, I'm scared. I'm always scared of the stuff you send me. Michigan retailers urge people not to panic during statewide liquor shortage. Okay, that's serious news. What the hell is going on in Michigan?
Yeah, how do you run out of booze?
During Christmas.
All right, let's read this. This is the first like piece of news Colton, I think's ever sent me where I want to read more than just the headline. Zach Quinnell, a store manager at Somewhere Foods in Marquee, says the statewide liquor store has affected his shelves for months. Wait, what? Says the statewide liquor shortage has affected his shelves for months. Spirit sales in Michigan is a $1.5 billion a year business. Blah, blah, blah. Not affecting beer or wine. Okay, where's the part where it's actually shortages? You didn't read this one at all, did you, Colton?
Just the headline.
God, you're a bastard.
Well, the headline was great. Yeah.
In a press release last week, the Michigan Department of Licensing and Regulatory Affairs cited software issues as to one of the three authorized distributor agents as the cause of the shortage. Further details remain elusive. So apparently a software glitch is causing people not to be able to drink in Michigan.
That sounds a little suspicious.
There's some Michigan alcohol like manager who's just got like truckloads of booze in his like garage. That's what's happening.
Like, yeah. The software's wrong, man. I don't know what happened.
Definitely got to update.
Actually, the article I have is a little bit different.
Hey, that's just weird. They're rationing rum. Of course they are.
They're talking to some specific store owner and they have a quote from him. I really don't know exactly what software issues are, Quinnell said. So he's calling them out pretty hard, I think.
Am I putting the news segment jingle that I sang? I cut it. Like, am I putting that every time before the news now?
Yeah. I think you have to. There's like, what's the point of doing news if we don't have a jingle?
Fair enough.
All right. So, I had a few other news segments. We'll save them for next time. So we're moving on. We've already got half an hour in, and all we've touched is news and Zeno. Yeah. So we wanted to talk a little bit about
market segments.
There's like things market segments, right?
You know how I knew that is that I looked up where I typed the URL.
I named the episode properly. That's right.
That's actually the
yeah.
I'm not used to that. Usually it's something ridiculous. So,
fork and spoon raspberries.
Market segments. All right. So what are you guys thinking? What do you want to jump into? I've got a new article I want to give you guys some details on before it goes to print for this winter issue. It's got some sales data and for kind of the end of the year sales data on a few different market segments and categories. But first, why don't you guys dig in and kind of talk about what you're thinking of first?
Yeah, I think we need to define what we're talking about in market segments because what I have what it is in my
head. Right. I mean, it's what category what category your spirit falls in terms of price point. And then I guess from there, marketing and everything else.
Right, but is it singularly like dependent on price?
I think so.
Right. I think so too, which kind of sucks, right? Because this is actually a great example for Bold and Vodka. Because we always tell people, we're like, you know, we make a premium product at a whatever, what do they call it? A well price, right? Like the price for $7.50 is like around $20 in most places.
Well, so you actually.
But, I mean, that's still premium.
Well, I think that you, exactly. You actually make a high end premium product. That you sell for a premium price. Yeah.
So just to kind of break down, and this is, so a lot of different data companies kind of use these general categories. I believe this falls in line with what Discus does. I believe the Nielsen market data follows these as well. But essentially you've got value, which is less than $10. You've got mid, which is $10 to $15. You've got premium, which is $15 to $25. An ultra, which is $25 plus. So those are kind of the categories that most people go off of.
Do those categories account for type of like category of product?
Right. Because that's not fair to say. Like, yeah. If you compare vodka to a whiskey, that's, you know, who's going to buy a $65 bottle of vodka?
Lots of people. I think.
Yeah, lots of people would, but I mean, it's like yeah, it's like
they really would.
It's like Belvedere single estate, and it really doesn't taste that much different, anyways.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's obviously going to be differences between aged and unaged products, as well as anything that's trying to, you know, imports, you know, imported products, anything that's trying to look like it's an incredibly premium product, that you're going to have the $250 products, things like that. But this is, these are the different categories, and pretty much any product, whatever, you know, whatever TTB category it is, will fit in one of these price categories. And then of course you can break out the actual product categories from that.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, the reason, you know, Bolden was established before I got there too, at least the branding of it all. So I think that you're right. So it's a premium, but it's ultra premium product, because I mean, there's a lot, you know, we're making it from raw materials. There's a lot of work that goes into it. The bottles.
Well, right, but the branding behind that is, here's this high-end premium product that you get at just a normal premium price, right?
Right, exactly, exactly. Because, you know, we're also realistic. Like, yes, we make vodka with character, but it's still vodka.
Yeah.
People drink it, right?
Yeah. Well, and I think you, on the consumer side, whatever you're trying to sell has to match up. So if you have a premium quality product and it's in a value packaging, that's going to confuse the consumer. That doesn't make sense. They're not going to buy it at that price. Or if you have, you know, a really value quality product in a premium package and you're selling it at a premium price, that's going to not match up either. And consumers are going to get pissed because it's not what they paid for. So it has to match up. I mean, I think if you're going to go one way or the other, go up, try and put a better package on it, try and sell it for a little more. But again, if the customer's perception doesn't match up with the reality, you are eventually going to run into problems.
And the another big issue is once you do it, you're kind of stuck in that spot.
Yeah. You can't just come out and rebrand at a, with the same name, at least.
I mean, yeah, you can, but to a certain extent, you're limited to how much. You definitely don't want to go up too much, right? If you come out and you're like, hey, here's my gin, I was selling it for $25. Well, I bought a nicer bottle, now I'm spending, you know, whatever. I got a custom bottle, so now it's $30 a bottle.
Well, I mean, we had a couple of years ago, there was a lot of consumer pushback because one of the ways bigger brands were trying to get around that is they wanted to raise the price of their product. They couldn't. So what they did is, weren't they essentially going to lower the proof? So essentially they were going to lower the proof, which makes their juice go farther, which gives us more product to sell. But there was huge pushback on that. That was a couple of years ago, right?
Yeah. Maker's Mark tried to do that for a little bit. And before that though, and people didn't talk about it, and people always gave me shit about it. Because they're like, no, it's two different products. But like Wild Turkey Rye 101, which is a great spirit. I love that.
Rye. It is.
But like, you couldn't find it for a while. You could only find like their 80 proof for the longest time. It like just kind of disappeared. And it's come back now. But they said, oh, no, it's two different lines. I'm like, well, it is.
Sure, one has more water.
Clearly selling more. Yeah, right. Like, right, and I got like some freaking fanboy bourbon American whiskey fanboy or something. This is a long time ago. This is when I was living in Pittsburgh, and he was like, "Oh, well, it's two different things." And I'm like, "Well, yeah, it is, but they're doing it that way. They're making more of that because they make a higher margin on it. They're using less of their product and making the same amount of money."
Exactly. So, which is another way that you can kind of. Basically, if you want to increase your margins, that's what you have to do, because it's really hard just to raise your price.
Right. So again, you kind of get stuck in there, right? You lock yourself in with packaging and price. That's a big issue. And like, I like pulling out these examples because it kind of gives listener perspective, right?
Right. Yeah. So I think this is worth noting too. I've got a little bit of data here that I can share in terms of the actual growth over the year. So essentially year over year dollar growth for the premium category, that's the $15 to $25 range, saw an increase of 6.9% compared to 4.4% for the same period last year. Even more striking was the growth of the ultra category, which grew 11.3% year over year compared to 5.1% the prior year. So ultra premium is growing just wicked fast. And again, I should source this. This is actually from an article that Kevin O'Brien at Zapponi & Company, their mergers and acquisition company, they do a yearly M&A review for us in our winter issue. This is a draft.
Do they have numbers on, you know, what that growth is based off of, and in terms of, you know, how big was that segment before they started, right? Because, you know, 10% of, you know, 1% of the market sounds great, but is not all that great in actuality.
Right. So in terms of like the actual metrics for the industry, so let's see, I believe, let's see, for the 52-week period ending October 5th, 2019, the data showed overall spirits dollar volume growth of 4.9%, which was significantly higher than the previous growth of 1.3% for the same period. And then I think somewhere in here is the actual percentage of where that breaks down to. Oh, yeah, yeah. So, and this is from a data company, Impact. It looks like, oh, these are projections.
Well, so I have one up in front of me that's... it has value, high-end premium, premium, and super premium. Value it has was about, this is just for whiskeys, but value was about 7% of the market. Super premium, so that top end, was about 17%. Premium was 18%, and then high-end premium was almost 60%. So that's where, like, I bet you high-end premium's growth didn't sound all that great. It was probably 0.5%. But overall, that's still a humongous portion, right?
It, in terms of the overall market, yeah.
No, I mean, when I was at Beam, I remember marketing people, that's what they drove on. They're like, it's everywhere. And you think about it. Think of like Buffalo Trace Antique Collection. Think about even like look at Beam's products now. They have all those Basil Hayden expressions, right? Where they're in that, it's that upper echelon of premiumization of their product. Like, even though you don't know what the liquid is, it has the appearance of, this is a higher end product. And that's what really people were drinking, especially in the brown liquor categories. I'd love to see those numbers broken down to like gin and vodka, like clear spirits. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Colt, does the data you have in front of you, does it have the breakdown of beer, spirits, and wine over in terms of overall alcohol beverage?
Well, this one is no. This one is just okay.
So
American
for this
whiskey.
One, this is a graph for 2018. Beer accounts for about 47% of sales. Spirits is 35.1%, and wine is about 15%. That's what this one from Impact is showing in terms of overall sales. And then they also show projections up to like 2025. And essentially, I won't go through all those specifics, but essentially their accounting, their projections indicate that beer will actually drop to like 41.8% and spirits will increase about 4.5%, which is interesting. So they're projecting
depending on
for
the tax
overall bit. Spirit market sector. Yeah. I mean, taxes will definitely impact that.
Yeah, that's crazy. And now this is, you know, we're talking about all this. It makes a difference if you're craft and you're making a whiskey that you have to rest for 2 years.
Right.
Your price point is already bumping you into one of these categories.
Because you're just, your economies of scale. You can't compete. It's so much harder.
Right. So it's very difficult. Like that all, just keep that in the back of your.
Right. And also there's a huge caveat that we have not gotten into yet with this data and all of the data that you're going to see on spirits in the US, especially when it comes to the, you know, if they're talking about craft brands or anything like that, independent distilleries, there's one big caveat that we can get to when you're ready, but that really affects the overall numbers and kind of skews things. All right. So do you guys want to hear kind of this big caveat, especially when it comes to like the top 25 spirits brands, which like make up about 42% of the total distilled spirits cases sold?
It's all from one place.
It's all from one place, basically. So here we go. There's a significant amount, obviously, that come from the top 25 brands. Let's see. The year over year growth rate for the top 25 brands in the US in 2018 was 2%, which is pretty solid. The growth rate across the entire distilled spirits industry for the same period was 1.9%. Based on these figures, it appears that the top 25 brands are performing better than the overall industry. While that may be the case in aggregate, further analysis revealed that one brand in particular is driving growth amongst this group. Tito's. Tito's Vodka, independently owned and now the second largest spirit brand in the industry, grew at an astronomical rate of 22% over the last year. holy shit.
What is the number one?
I'm going to tell you. For comparison's sake, the largest brand, Smirnoff, declined by 0.7%. The third largest brand, Bacardi, declined by 2.5%. And the fourth largest brand, Captain Morgan, declined by 2.7%. The only brand in the top five that grew was Jack Daniel's at a meager 0.3%. So if you remove Tito's from the top 25, which leaves all the others, it reveals that the group only grew by 0.6% for the year. So Tito's is ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't get it with Tito's. Why?
Ah, man, Tito, like, the dude's marketing. Smart. It's amazing marketing. The timing was great. He's just smart as shit. I mean, Tito knew exactly what he's doing. He's leveraged every opportunity, and he stayed independent. I mean, they're huge. I mean, they're friggin' bigger than Jack Daniel's and Captain Morgan, and it's just wild.
That's insane.
Yeah. So that is a huge caveat for everyone to take into account when they're looking and hearing sales data and projection trends for the spirits industry, especially for some of the bigger stuff, is that's going to account for a large portion of it. So ask good questions when people are throwing numbers at you.
Yeah. And make an American vodka. Because
make an American vodka that is in the premium category. That is your best path to market.
Well, there is. If they're growing that much, that means that category has space.
Well, that's it.
Wait, were you saying, so their growth is bigger, but they're not bigger than Jack Daniel's?
Yes, they are. Think, right? They're the second biggest brand in America.
Whoa.
Yep.
Whoa.
That's all I have.
Yeah. Smirnoff. The only one bigger is Smirnoff.
They're too big to fail, guys.
It's the NFL.
And obviously, this is a singular spirits brand. We're not talking about like brand companies like Diageo, Pernod Ricard. Obviously, they're massive. But in terms of Tito, just as a singular brand, second biggest. Just crazy big.
Yeah, this is a brand where the dude who created it is still alive.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, he's
Jack
still
Daniels,
really young.
Jim Beam. It's brand new.
I mean, hell, we've met Tito. He spoke at the second ACSA. He was the keynote at second ACSA in Austin and gave like a 3-hour speech talking about his history. It was wild. It was really good. It was, no one can argue that the man is not passionate. He really is. Say what you will about him. Say, you know, if you have complaints about how he markets, positions himself, whatever you have, he is very sincere about how he feels about his company and what he does.
Yeah.
Now I'm super excited to meet Mr. White Claw.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
We'll wait for that day.
If we can find a way to get Mr. White Claw and Tito in the same room, I mean,
yeah. First name White, last name Claw.
Okay. Well, you do know Tito's last name, right?
Beverage.
Yeah.
The most ridiculous.
Exactly. Come on. It doesn't get more amazing than that.
It is ridiculous. Okay. You can't. It's hard to hate him. Like, I mean, they did. He did. His company, I mean.
Oh, yeah. You hear stories about like these small, tiny little dive bars that you go in and they're like, oh, yeah, we know Tito. He used to come in here all the time.
Yeah.
Like, everywhere. He spent 25 years just
hustling.
Selling that brand hustling. Constantly. Yeah.
Yep.
Hustling.
Yep. You're absolutely right.
And I mean, so hats off to that. Okay. Moving on.
I think I agree with you, though, in terms of Tito's, I don't think they're going to be the only vodka brand in America. Like, it doesn't work that way. People, as they get a brand they like, especially with the younger generations, you know, quote unquote millennials and assholes like us, they do like to experiment and find out if they like a category. I see Tito's as bringing more people to a category potentially, and potentially giving you the opportunity to grow in that vodka market if you can do something a little different. I could be totally wrong, but
do you think the next hot vodka has to be gluten-free?
Mine's, no, I think it has to be packed with gluten.
Yeah, mine's just I just bottle gluten, call it vodka.
Yeah.
Yep. That's my gut feelings. More gluten.
It is handmade. God. Handmade gluten.
Yeah. Handmade gluten, right? Did they, I think, did he settle those lawsuits? Because so there, for a listener, a couple years back, there was a number of lawsuits. I think they originated out of California. Basically, they were suing him for false advertising, saying that his product was not handmade, which, okay, you can get into the whole argument of what does handmade mean in distilling, which, whatever. But I think
until it distills, they
squeeze the goddamn vodka. Yeah. He squeezes it out of his own iron fist.
Yeah.
No, did that go in his favor? Did they settle out of court? Does anyone know
they
the
won.
To that?
I know they won at least a few of them, and I think the rest dropped.
That's what I thought. That's what I thought. Which is actually good. I think that I'm actually really glad someone like Tito was able to say, screw it, I'm not gonna settle, I'm gonna fight you. Cause that could potentially, I mean, that could have set precedent.
I mean, even if they lost, it certainly didn't slow him down.
No. Well, the fact that I haven't heard any more lawsuits about that makes me think that he probably, I mean, granted, we could probably do a Google search and figure that out. I'm sure I've done stories on it. I should know, but God knows I don't read my own content, right? Who has time for that? I don't listen to my own podcast. I'm pretty sure like we can get Tito on the podcast. I know that sounds silly, but I think it'd be fun to interview him.
Oh, that would be great.
Yeah, I've got.
You are my sworn enemy.
Right? Oh my God. He'd probably love that, to be honest. He obviously, like, part of me gets why he gets so frustrated, because he did, like,
yeah,
he started like rough. Like, yeah, he did start basically damn near out of a garage. He also obviously sourced product for that interim time, like we talked about. I don't think there's any problem with that. But, you know, you do get people who are willing to say, oh yeah, he's full of shit, he doesn't make anything. And of course that's going to piss him off. I mean, I'm not necessarily defending the guy.
I think it used to piss him off. I think now he just looks at his fucking Duck or Scrooge McDuck stacks and says, you know,
he's like, hold on as I back paddle through my
I just want to get Tito and Bentley together, Bentley Heritage, and just have them like
compare watches.
Compare watches and have like money fights. Although they're like, seriously, that Chris Bentley is one of the sweetest guys I think I've ever met. He was like, he's so incredibly kind. Like, he's another one I'd love to get on the podcast.
Well, I mean, when we if we do get Tito on, I'd love to know, like, did they have a lot of investors? I'm sure they're public now, but I mean,
I don't think he's public. No, he's still fully, like, I think he's got investors, but I don't think they have an IPO.
Yeah.
Fuck.
I know it's crazy, right? He's a weird anomaly.
It's awesome. I mean, I do think that let's be honest, without Tito's, I don't think that I would be making Bolden.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Not that I'm making anything that it's almost like a completely different spirit, but it's opened up a door for American vodka to be reevaluated.
Yeah. Right. Bolden would be some like whipped cream flavored frou-frou drink if it weren't for Tito.
That's a really good point. I mean, before that, you had imported Smirnoff, right? So essentially, that was the top thing people would drink. And it's still the biggest brand, but it's nice to know an actual American brand is really blowing it out of the water. I don't know. I'm a patriotic a-hole, so I'm proud of that.
Yeah, build a wall.
just around Tito's.
Yeah.
Hey, if anyone can
secede,
keep
the vodka
the US,
safe.
Yeah. Keep the vodka safe. I'm on board with that. Let's protect Tito. Let's let him. I'd vote for Tito.
You know, people aren't building enough castles nowadays. We really need to step our game up.
My dream is to have a moat.
Yeah. Well, you do live in New Orleans, so you're close.
Yeah, pretty much I live in the moat.
Okay, so what do you guys think? Do you think FET is going to take a big, like, if it doesn't pass, do you think we're going to see a big slowdown? Do you think it'll ever actually recede? My gut is it probably won't recede, but we could see an actual slowdown a little bit.
I think plateau. It'll plateau.
I
think, but it won't happen right away. I think it will still see some growth. And, you know, if it goes into like 2021, it's just going to become stagnant. And like the industry's changing enough though, where there's all these acquisitions and mergers and,
yeah,
you know, everything that's built, you know, I talked about it. We talk about it all the time. To open up a distillery now, scale is one of the things that you really have to, you can leverage. You can get a lot more investment. You can have a lot more value just by being to scale where you can produce more than 2,000 cases a year.
Well, I think there just wasn't enough time, right? Like there wasn't enough time to see a real benefit. Like, the distilleries that were already operating, we all saw a benefit and everyone put their money to probably expansions and, you know, equipment or marketing or whatever. But the people who, you know, saw the tax cut and said, all right, let's start a distillery, they're probably just finishing their business plans.
Yeah.
They're going to start pitching in January. Like, oh, fuck.
Yeah. Well, and hopefully most of them planned ahead and built in a plan B where it's, you know, this is the actual tax rate. Anyone who didn't shouldn't be starting a distillery. Like, I hate to say that, but if you're starting a business plan based off of a 2-year tax cut, that's really, that's, don't do that.
Yeah. I mean, well, let's full disclosure here, listener, that when we consult with places, we always account for the full tax rate.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Like that's what we say. We just assume that it's going to go away. Now, granted, we fight hard and we don't want that to happen, but.
And it'll make us look really good if it doesn't. So.
Yeah. Right.
Right. Well, or you could just do what Colton personally does. He just doesn't pay personal taxes. So.
Yeah, you probably shouldn't say that. Yeah.
No, it's too late. I mean, that's why I said personal taxes. I did, like, in case there's a weird chance listener is a TTB agent, they pay all of their excise.
This podcast is recorded exclusively from the Cayman Islands. So.
And this is totally live, too. I have no ability to change any.
That's right. Exactly.
Well, cool. I mean, yeah, I think that, you know, the whole market segment thing is, it's nebulous. Is that the right word? Ever changing, right? Like,
well, I think what's the worst about it is that it changes. It like everything stays the same, except the words change all the time. So now what used to be premium is ultra quadruple.
Super premium. Captain America.
Captain America premium.
Yeah, but I think that like it changes. You know, the only fixed thing is really the price brackets that we're putting them in. But really, those are totally obscure what it really is, because you have craft versus, you know, if you're producing 30,000 cases or you're producing 3,000 cases, that's a big difference in what that bottle is. Even if it's the same liquid. And the same packaging. So it's kind of skewed and it's always ever evolving and changing. And craft really kind of upset the apple cart of what those categories really mean.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. And, you know, I don't think I have any specific data here, but one of the things we should look for, we'll try and get maybe Kevin on. I think he'd be great to have like a mergers and acquisition podcast episode, but we can ask him some specific questions about like how DSS is performing. Because I'd love to know, because, you know, there are certain categories we know are growing. Mezcal is doing amazing. Mezcal continues to show really good growth. I think rye is doing pretty well. And especially what you guys said after being at the ACSA judging, we're starting to see some really good rye come on the market. I think that's going to see a continued growth. So we have some specific categories we know we're doing well, but I want to know actual numbers for like RTDs, DSS, some of those innovative products. What is happening with those in terms of actual sales? I think they're doing well, but I'd love to see the data.
Yeah, how's Pachuga? I want to know. I need hot to spirit. Know.
All of that.
You're a Pachuga, guys.
The year of Pachuga.
Is that another shirt that we won't sell?
We will put that on there for sure.
Okay. So, listener, get on to our website. We have one, apparently. Still talking. What is our website?
Stilltalking.com. Stilltalkingpodcast.com, guys. Still
Of course it's Karen, terrible.
Karen. Creative, please help.
Should we just need to do a pre-canned recording of Karen telling people how to help us. Like, that's just what we need. Okay, so go to our website, thestilltalkingpodcast.com, and you should listen to episodes, buy merch, basically just support all of Zeno's illicit activities, because
he needs
all that sweet, sweet merch money. I mean, if you really want to support us, like we joke, but yeah, you can actually support us. Buy merch or give us a review on iTunes or one of those other Spotifying places. Things where you listen to us.
Fuck all that. You don't have to give us anything because I don't really care about any of that shit. Go on there and make a comment and say, hey, I want you guys to talk about this. Or how do you feel about the Darkwing Duck series and how it ended? Like, ooh, I don't care, right? Because I don't even remember how it ended because that show sucked.
What? Yeah. Get off my podcast. My podcast. It's Colton's podcast. He's the one that actually does shit. We really should appreciate Colton for putting up with us.
Well, look, guys, you know, we have shirts, we have hoodies, we have hats, but really, if you want, we can make a shower curtain with any picture on it, including nudes. So,
Zeno?
Nudes.
Nudes.
You heard it here first.
If you want nudes of Zeno on your shower curtain, just full blown.
100%. I will do a nude photo shoot if someone wants a nude shower curtain.
Oh, that sounds so amazing. I'm actually on the website right now. I'm going to buy me some. I'm going to get some nude Zeno stickers. And I'll put them. Oh, yeah. This is good.
Better use a macro lens for that photo shoot.
All right, guys, anything else? Zeno, you want to take us out?
I already grunted with actual apathy. But all right. Final thoughts. Do I have to come up with something again? Is this what I got to do? You got a final thought?
Just grunt us out.
My final thought is if we haven't emphasized enough how important the FET reduction is. Over the last 2 years.
What will you spend your money on?
We're talking about it.
Your saved money. Or I guess what... I think I asked Reed...
I will spend it on I Am Listener stickers from the Still Talking
Podcast. I asked Reed last episode, what do you have to give up when the tax goes up? Mine will be nude shower curtains.
Yeah. That's a good call. What will you have to give up? Yeah, I mean... I don't think I would be at the company that I'm with if it didn't happen already.
Yeah.
Right? Because they had an opportunity to really dump some money in 2 years into some things, including hiring people. So, I'm very grateful for it, and we need to make sure we keep talking about it.
Well, you know, at least for the next month.
Yeah. All right. God damn it. Way to bring us down.
I thought you were going to say something fun.
You
like,
were the
you
one
know,
that did it.
You'd buy skids full of ramen. I don't know.
Skids full of ramen?
At what point is that fun?
Yeah. I just eat all the flavor packets.
Just need that sodium fix.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like, get hold on. Hit. My legs are swollen. Yeah, because I'm retaining water for some weird reason.
Oh, I love it. All right. I literally bought our first item on the merch store. I'm buying a knit hat. It better not suck, Colton.
I do knit them myself, right?
Yeah, that's why. So yeah. It could take 3 to 8 weeks.
3 to 8. That is a large window.
Okay, except I did just do it to my old address. So I'm an idiot, but the people living in my old house will be getting a nice Still Talking knit hat.